Victor and Lois are siblings who were both diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. Lois lives and works in London, and Hector is a student living in Vienna. In their weekly podcast, Anxiety Calling, they'll be talking about different aspects of living with generalized anxiety disorder and how they get by in day-to-day life.
Welcome to episode 11 of Anxiety Calling. I'm Hector.
And I'm Lois. And today we're going to be talking about anxiety and depression. And we'd like to start this episode off with a trigger warning, because we will be talking about symptoms of depression, which may include suicidal thoughts.
Yeah, and other possibly triggering feelings that can come when talking about this quite heavy topic this time, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it is said that depression can cause anxiety, and anxiety can cause depression. And in my case, after I'd had long problems with massive panic attacks and anxiety from that, I did develop a depression at the time. So I was 23, because I think what really caused it for me was just this feeling of not being really in control of my feelings and my anxiety and the panic, and not being able to function or take part in normal day-to-day life. It felt that really did cause general feeling of depression. But also, I don't know if you have this as well, but after I've had a panic attack or anxiety attack, when it's passed, I will also feel very depleted and depressed also. I don't know if you also have that.
Yeah, definitely. Like, for a couple of days afterwards, it can be, it's kind of like coming down from something, I suppose. And I think it's just like this, I'm so exhausted, you know, from it. And a lot of bad feelings are kind of coursing through your body while you're having a panic attack. So yeah, I think for a couple of days after a big panic attack, I will feel quite depressed too. Or I mean, at least a couple of hours afterwards, for sure.
I think there's several reasons for this in my case. I think the one thing is, I'll just call it intellectual level, I think I find it depressing that I've had another setback.
Yeah, that's the thing. It feels like such a setback, doesn't it, every time you have a panic attack.
So that's the intellectual side. But I think I seem to remember having read or understood that just on the chemical level in your body, after having used so many stress hormones have passed through your system, it does actually on the chemical level also have an effect of causing depression.
Mm.
It was actually quite, I could never decide what was worse for me. The feeling of depression or the feeling of anxiety, because when I had one or the other, then I thought, okay, nothing feels worse than this. But probably now, so right now I think I'm in quite a stable phase. I haven't had anxiety, massive anxiety or panic or depression for a few months. I mean, phases, little phases, but not like massive. And if I remember back at the time, I think for me the most difficult to deal with was just weeks of this feeling of utter doom, as it were. It felt I remember just sitting in a chair, and it was like in a very, like I said, an intense phase. I was 23, 24, and it just felt like I couldn't take part in anything that was happening around me. I was just, you know, I was seeing people moving about and people were saying things to me. It was like I was completely severed off from the world around me. And that was the most frightening and intense feeling of depression that I'd had. Because on the one side, it's very scary, and that caused more anxiety, of course. It was like a horrible cycle of anxiety, depression, and anxiety about the depression, and depression about the anxiety. So, and you didn't know what to think and what you were thinking. And so it's very confusing and very, very difficult. That was, I think, the toughest feeling for me was that.
Yeah, that is often the thing, isn't it? It's quite, because you do have, I mean, with anxiety, there is one of the symptoms is the sort of dissociative feeling, which also has you feeling like you're kind of from the outside looking in, or that you're kind of detached from everyone. But with depression, for me, I feel like it's much, much stronger, and it's all the time. It's sort of like, it kind of feels like there's this barrier between you and the outside world somehow.
Mm.
It's sort of this massive barrier between you and everything, and communicating is difficult. Everything, for me, I think everything is so difficult when it's depression. Somehow, actually, because you're so right, when you're having a bad anxiety phase, you think this is the worst thing, this is terrible. But then when you're having a depression phase, you feel the same. And so it's really, I think it's probably impossible to say which one is better or worse, because I think they are both equally bad in their own ways.
And they facilitate each other so much.
Yes. And also there are so many crossovers. So sometimes I have a hard time kind of detecting whether what I'm experiencing is the anxiety illness or the depression illness, because there are a lot of crossovers with the two of them.
What I find interesting about depression is that people have it in different ways and also different times, for example. So, I mean, there are many people that I know who have the toughest time with depression is in the morning after waking up. For me, that's not the case. I think for me, after waking up is more an anxious kind of feeling. But mm-hmm. I did for a long time, and it does recur sometimes. I mean, I had it about a month ago for just one evening. But the very strange thing that happens to me is that, and you're not even expecting it. It's like a filter shifts over your vision or over your brain. It's like a brain fog or something. And it just, for me, it was bound to a particular time. And it was usually, I think, like 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
to about 10 or 11 p.m. It was like a change of, like putting on dark glasses or something, because it's just like your vision and everything, how you see everything around you, just sort of shifted. And I don't know if you experience like that, or if you have it more in the morning or the whole day, but for me, when it comes, and like I said, I don't have it that frequently anymore, but once this in December it did happen, and that did freak me out a bit, because I hadn't had it for an awful long time. Like I said, early evening it just comes, and then it just completely takes me over, and I'm really, and it's especially bad if I'm, for example, I remember I had a friend over and we were just normal, and just suddenly my mood just completely shifted within a couple of minutes, and I just had no idea how to, I mean, I didn't talk to her about it or didn't let her know. I just waited for it to pass, because I kind of knew what it was, but it was uncomfortable. And in that moment I did actually wish that I was alone and didn't have to, because it was stressing me that I was suddenly in this mood.
Yeah, it's quite scary the way it can.
But is it with
just
you also sometimes
creep up
particular
on you?
Times? I mean,
for me, it's different. It's usually if I'm going through a depressive phase, because usually comes in phases of at least a couple of days, sometimes 1 to 2 weeks when I have it, because it usually is quite intense when it does come, and then it's just all the time, and it's just all the time, and then it's like,
well, you wake up and you feel it and it goes on.
Yes, and it's, and I everything throughout the entire day is difficult, and the whole, I don't sleep then either, and then the whole night I think the worst most intense feelings that I have in connection with depression is in the middle of the night. That's when it is really particularly unstable, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I have my most dangerous thoughts, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Because kind of during the day, like I'll be very depressed, and I think the way it differs from
better during the day, maybe.
Sorry. Yeah. Yes, exactly. I can distract. Exactly. I'm not quite so alone with my terrifying thoughts during the day, because, like, you know, I'll have work to do or something. But what I think a big difference with depression is, for me, versus anxiety, is because anxiety is one of my constant companions. It's just kind of always there, and you know that it doesn't mean that I'm always suffering from it, because sometimes I feel, you know, good, but I still function better with the anxiety, because even if I'm feeling anxious, I can still, you know, have a shower. I can still get some work done. I can still eat. I can still, you know, cook and everything. The trouble with depression when I'm having more intense depressive times, I can't even shower. I can't get up and shower sometimes for days. Mm-hmm. And I don't eat and I don't even like watching something isn't even a distraction because I'm not even taking in what I'm seeing. Mm. And that's really hard, because then it'll be like, and I just physically can't bring myself, for instance, to take a shower, even though I know I'll feel better if I do take a shower, but I can't seem to get up the energy and the willingness to actually do it, you know? Mm. And again, it's also a phase then when I will like shut myself off from people. Like at the moment, I live with my partner, so that's obviously a good thing, because I mean, I'm not able to, it's like the most I could do is like, you know, shut myself in the room, but like I can't, we live together, like obviously I can't avoid him all day, and that's the good thing, because that means I'm forced to interact with someone, and if I interact with someone then it helps, you know. Mm. But I do tend to shut out people from the outside. So like if people want to, like right now it's not really such a thing because I can't meet up with anyone anyway, you know. But if, when I was going, I think through, at some point this year, I can't remember exactly when it was, it might have been October, I had a really I think about 2 weeks of really, really strong depression. And we were allowed out, and we were allowed to see people. Actually, it might not have been October. It was sometime this year when we were allowed to see people outside the house. And a friend wanted to meet up, but he has the same, he also has anxiety, he also has depression. So I was also able to say, like, I just can't do it right now. I can't meet you because I have to, I'm going through a really bad phase, and I need to just do nothing for a bit. And or, you know, and I wasn't like, we, you know, texted a bit, but we didn't, you know, he completely understood that I wasn't in a position to get out of the house at the time. And it's great if you can communicate that openly with someone about it, but if it's somebody who doesn't have it, it's quite hard to explain to them that you don't want to see them, because it's not personal, you know. You just can't face seeing anyone sometimes.
I think I can function relatively well despite despite having the phases. I mean, I force myself to have a shower and I go to university or work or whatever I have to do. But I have this thing, I don't know if you have this as well, but it feels like when I have a depressed phase, it just feels like time is just not moving at all. And even though I know intellectually that it's a phase and it's, you know, gonna pass after a certain amount of days or weeks, when it's actually happening, it's impossible to understand that anymore.
This is the thing, I think that's like, probably why you can't feel times, because you know that it does pass, it always passes. Mm. But because time has sort of slowed down, so it feels like it goes on forever.
I think it's quite hard to describe the feeling for me, how it feels itself, if I was to describe what it feels like. Like I said before, it's kind of like your vision changes in a way, or there's like a shift in, or like it's like a fog sort of envelops you in a way. And, well, that's how it feels for me. And like I said, time just doesn't seem to change, and I have this feeling that I just can't wait another second for this feeling staying as it is. But yeah, luckily it does eventually pass. I mean, what worked for me, I have to say, because it was usually quite easy to calculate when it was going to happen, because it was just like every evening in the early evening, what I started doing was, as a coping strategy, was I would just every day, specifically that time, I would force myself before I knew it was going to set in to go to the gym and really run quite a distance until my body just hurt so much that I just didn't feel any of the emotional difficulty or heaviness. But of course, you can't do that every day, and you can't.
That's the thing. It sort of sounds like a slightly, possibly more healthy form of self-harm.
It's kind of that was kind of what it was like, I think.
Because I think people really need to understand, because this is something that people kind of make fun of people for, of like, especially teenagers when they cut themselves and stuff, right? And really, don't do that. Don't make fun of someone who is harming themselves, and don't humiliate them for that, because that is, it's obviously a clear sign someone is struggling with something like depression, because one coping mechanism with depression is you so want to stop feeling that way that you know that physical pain will distract you. It's like one of the few things that can distract you while you're in a really deep depression is physical pain. And that's why people tend to self-harm when they are depressed, because they just want to feel it's something else, and a physical pain is so unfrightening in comparison to depression.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think,
or excessive amounts of alcohol.
Exactly. Excessive amounts of alcohol, they're numbing feelings and they're sedatives. Or drugs, you know, that make you feel good. Or, you know, sex is also a typical way of trying to, I don't know, distract yourself from depression. Although depression can also wreak havoc on your sex drive. So you might not necessarily feel like having sex when you have depression. But that's another coping mechanism that I know a lot of people use. But I really would like urge anyone, if you know someone is self-harming, then don't just like judge them and think this is just a way to get attention, because that's something that I've heard so many times, you know.
Well, I mean, it's another one of those things or part of the stigma that people who haven't experienced it themselves obviously find it difficult to imagine. I mean, I'm ashamed to say that before I'd experienced it myself, I was not super understanding to people I knew who had depression. I mean, I wasn't unkind. I was just, you know, I thought to myself, you know, why can't they just pull themselves together? You know, they have everything they basically need in life. You can have a job, you can have, you know, a nice family, you can have a good social situation, and you could have, you know, from all perspectives, everything could be fine, but yet you could still be suffering terribly from depression. That is the difficult thing about it. And I think there the problem also is that you start to feel, I mean, I felt terrible guilt also for feeling depressed sometimes.
Yeah.
Because I thought I have no reason to be depressed. I have money, I have a job, I have basically everything I need. What excuse do I have compared to other people who have it much harder? And then I felt terribly guilty for a long time.
That's a big one as well. Guilt is another one. But yes, it's kind of, and then also like what comes with that is like this feeling of like, well, you know, why do I feel this way if I don't have any reason? And then like guilt can quite quickly turn into sort of self-loathing.
Yeah.
Which then just spirals you further and further and further down. Like it's really hard, because the longer it goes on, the more you kind of start hating yourself for feeling this way, you know?
Well, I noticed one of, for me, the most difficult things about a depression phase is that it robs me of the ability to identify real emotions anymore. At the time I was living with my partner, ex-partner, but you know, that was a while ago. And one real difficulty I had when I was having a strong depression phase, but I understood this, I read about this and I knew that it was a fact, but it didn't make it much easier, was that when I was having, and not everybody has this, but I've heard that many people do have this, is that you find it impossible to feel kind or loving emotions towards others.
Mm-hmm.
I do have this problem when I have more of a phase of a depression, is that I'm not capable of pinpointing or my emotions, or saying, okay, this is someone I like, this is someone I don't like, because I just don't have a feeling anymore. And that was really difficult also for other people, of course.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why you tend to like distance yourself from people as well. And like at the time, it's when you're having a bad phase, like you, it can be very self-destructive because you distance yourself from people and often are very unkind to people who you would never treat that way while you were not going through one of these phases. Yes. You know, you would never dream of being nasty to them or being unkind or cruel in any way, but you just don't care somehow, you know? And then afterwards you feel so guilty again, which, you know, it's, you know, it's, and it's kind of like goes on and on and on, you know?
But I had the experience, and it was interesting to have the experience. So like I said, when I was like 23, 24, I had a long phase of intense depression and it was very difficult for my partner at the time. Then a couple of years later, I was in a different relationship and there it was the other way around. Basically, I was in a phase where I wasn't having any anxiety or depression. I was actually quite, I was doing well. But I started a relationship with a person who, it came, you know, you discovered it bit by bit, but she was suffering from a very, very strong form of depression. And I found it kind of ironic because it kind of, I mean, this was obviously a completely stupid thought and we talked about it last time about calm and whatnot, but it kind of felt like, it kind of felt like I was getting back what I'd given to my partner beforehand. And it was now in hindsight, it's just, at the time it was very difficult. And I have to say, I do have a lot of respect for, partners who, you know, who are patient and stick through these phases, because it was really hard for me to cope with her depression, even though I knew that what it was like on the other end, as it were, mm-hmm. what it was like for me, not being able to give me any kindness or love or anything was very, very difficult for me to take, even though I knew it didn't have anything to do with me, it was to do with her depression, but that was very difficult to deal with, I have to say. So I think on both sides, if we're talking about a relationship situation, it can be very, very difficult.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think, I mean, that's the thing. I think for me, it does, the fact that I live with my partner, it does give me a lot of quite a peace of mind, I think, because I was, when I was going through this phase this year of feeling very depressed, I was, you know, talking to my friend who also suffers from depression, and he was really, really worried about me. And he was like, you know, do you have, you know, the hotline numbers and stuff that you can call? Like, have you spoken to a professional and all that? It was like really, really worrying about me. And I was like, you know, you don't have to worry. Like I'm not living alone. And I, you know, my partner is, very good at like making sure that I don't die, you know. And he's like, yeah, but he's, you know, he's not like a mental health professional. I was like, yes, but that's the thing, I feel like if I was in the hands of a mental health professional, I might be even more depressed right now. Like, instead I'm living with someone who loves me and who I love too, and you know, he will make sure that, you know, I do eat something. He, you know, checks in on me, is nice to me. And, you know, I know that when I'm finished with that, it will end at some point and it's going to be okay. And so, and also he's very, very patient with me. So I don't take that for granted, of course, because I know that that is, you know, something that's not something you can take for granted, because a lot of people aren't, because I mean, I have had experiences with partners who were very, very impatient with me and very unkind when I was struggling with my mental health. But it does also, like, it is this relief, I think, to me that I know that it can't really get too out of hand for me at the moment, because, I have someone who will notice that, you know, who will notice it getting out of hand. And because I am sometimes incapable of seeing it myself, you know, how bad it's gotten. So it is, you know, it's very helpful to me, I think. I have immense respect, obviously, and don't take it for granted that he is so patient with me and doesn't, it doesn't really cause much trouble between us, to be honest, because it's okay for me to sometimes be like, listen, I just need some time by myself in the room, and I will, you know, come out when I'm ready to, and that's also, you know, fine. Like, I can have my space if I need it, and I can have attention when I need it too, you know.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's great if you're in a situation, a living situation, where you can communicate that openly. I think a difficulty in, well, I mean, even in professional life, even in work, I mean, it'd be quite difficult. I mean, I do know this thing. I did go to the doctor and get a sick note if I was just feeling too depressed to work. I have done that before.
Yeah.
If I was too anxious, I realized, okay, there's no point in me going to work because I just need time to sort of, you know, gather my strength. But I did remember that. So I would try to go to my GP to get that kind of sick note, but I did also once have to give in a sick note written by a psychiatrist, and I did remember feeling very uncomfortable about that, because we don't live in kind of environment or world or society where you can say where feelings of depression could be seen like a flu, you know? I mean, because you could have like a 2-week flu spell, or COVID for that matter, or anything. And but if you were to say, imagine if it were to be completely normal to write, to get a sick note for work because you're having a phase of depression, but that would automatically already put you in sort of the crazy corner.
Yeah, you can take mental health days, but it's exactly that. It's a mental health day, you know? Yeah. And that's like, you know, that's, I mean, cool. Yeah. Great that I can take a mental health day, but what if I need a mental health week or month, you know?
Yeah. And I think there are many, many, many people, I know many people who do get sick notes. They go to the doctor and say, listen, so you can be honest to your doctor. I mean, my doctor's great. I just tell her, this is what's happening with me. And she says, yeah, of course, you know, I'll give you 2 weeks or 1 week or whatever I say I need. And I think there are probably many people all over the world who have to do this, basically lie, because there is still so much fear and
lack of understanding.
Lack of understanding, but also, like you said before, people also ridicule it a bit.
Yes,
or don't take it seriously, or think it's not a real thing.
And it's like, I mean, I used to do the same thing. When I was still living in Germany, I did that. I had to do that quite a lot because I had a really great GP who, when I was going through difficult phases, would always like, you know, say, okay, well, you know, I'm going to give you, you know, I'll give you a sick note for a week and then you let me know how it's going. And if you need another one, then let me know, because they can only ever give you one for like 5 days at a time, I think.
Mm.
And she was really great in that way. Like because she really took it seriously. Like when I was going through really, really difficult phases, it was because I was sometimes, like, I had a really bad phase after a breakup where I was all over the place. And I was so all over the place that I was too scared. There was this fear of, I was so scared of everything that I couldn't even get to the office. Like I had to, and so I got, she wrote me off for a week, and then I was like, okay, well, I have to go back to the office. And even after the week of recovery time, I still needed to be escorted to the office by friends and family members for another week at least, because I was just so unstable at the time.
Mm. And I wonder if it were less of a big deal, whether one would have less of it anyway. You know,
because if there would be less of this, I think if it was okay, and if people also knew and accommodated mental health problems in the same way that they do, up to a point, physical problems, there would be less pressure on you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean there'd certainly be less anxiety around it, because I remember, I did also have a lot of anxiety around depression and anxiety, because one of my biggest fears still, and it's one that I can't quite shake, is that the mental difficulties that I sometimes have will make it impossible for me to earn money anymore. This is a huge fear I have, which is, it hasn't happened. You know, I've never been off for more than a week or two. And, but the fear of being not able to support or to earn a living because of that, because of the condition, does stress me a lot. And I think there are many people, I know quite a few people who have this fear and who don't allow themselves even if they do take time off, they feel so guilty and so stressed by the thought that it might be longer that it actually makes it harder to recover than if it was just, you know, okay, seen like a flu and or broken bone or something that just, we know, will heal.
I think one of the reasons it's not seen like that is because there's this false belief that you brought it on yourself. That if you could just snap out of it, everything would be fine. And I think it's like a really difficult thing to explain to people when I tell someone who doesn't have depression, when I tell them I'm depressed, or I'm suffering from depression, they always ask, "Oh, why?" What are you depressed about? The worst one is why? And I'm like, because I have depression. Like, but what are you depressed about? And it's like, nothing. I'm depressed because I have depression. And because you can be depressed about things. It's perfectly natural and normal and healthy to, you know, if there's something that's upsetting you, that you feel depressed. That's a very normal reaction to things. But the reason depression is a mental illness is because you get depressed without something necessarily triggering it. There isn't necessarily something happening on the outside that makes you feel this way. It sometimes just happens out of nowhere. Like you said, you had the, you know, a whole like routine of it happening at the same time every day, and it's there is no, you didn't do anything to make it happen. It just happens. And there are, like, obviously I think there are things that people, you know, can pinpoint that is happening in you physically that causes depression. So it's not completely just like this magical thing that doesn't really have, this doesn't have a physical side, because it does have a physical side. There are physical things happening in your brain that cause it. But the point is, it is like an illness. Like, it's not contagious, but it can happen without warning and without something necessarily happening. But it can also be, again, another side of it is that if you are someone who has depression, that you can be triggered by things that then can, like, have you spiraling in like a deep, you know, depression, which is obviously also hard.
Disclaimer: they are not mental health professionals. Any advice or information given in this podcast is based on their personal experiences and is meant to raise awareness and help end the stigma of mental illness. Thank you for listening, and this message was brought to you by Jib. The disclaimer.
Back on the topic of depression. I was thinking about, it is good that the topic is more talked about in media nowadays, and especially about self-harm or indeed even suicide, which has happened because of depression. I think it's really, that is really important that this is being discussed more, that there are, you know, helplines which have been made and there are more advertisements about this. But I think you can't stress enough how important it is to, if you are feeling depressed and feeling like it's growing over your head, that you do maybe find a person that you trust or inform of a help society or organization. Mm-hmm. So if you have those kind of feelings, then it's very important that you do get in touch with someone, because it does help. It did help me a lot. I have to say that I was lucky enough to always have people I could sort of talk about enough to take the edge off and not exacerbate my feelings at the time.
I think a lot of people with depression, they are very hesitant to call people that they do trust as well, because they're so scared of being a burden, you know?
Yeah.
And because I have friends who have really, really intense phases of depression, and it's quite hard, because I do try to give them that reassurance of, you know, they could never be a burden to me, you know? And I want them if they want to reach out, they can always reach out. But I also understand their position of saying like they don't want to do that because they're so scared that that if they always come with their problems and always come and want to talk about how depressed they are, that it will affect the friendship and that eventually I'll grow tired of them and try and get some distance from them. Obviously very considerate, but it's so that is something that does kind of hold people back from talking to people they trust. But I do know a lot of people who do use because I've never called a suicide hotline or mental health hotline so far. But
I've called one once.
But I know so many people who do, and they really tell me that it's so helpful and that it's a really good thing.
No, I was really unlucky because I called it wasn't specifically for depression or suicidal thoughts. It was a helpline, but it was a helpline for mental health for employees of the company that I was working for. And so I called up and a person answered and then asked me for my name. And I said my first name was Hector. And the first thing she did was laugh at me, basically.
Oh no, because of your name.
I thought, uh-huh, fuck you. Basically, I just hung up because I thought, you know.
How awful.
It was a terrible, I never called a hotline again. But like I said, that was just really unlucky.
That was unlucky. But I have heard really good things from people who do call these hotlines on a regular basis and say that it is really, really helpful.
No, I'm sure that most of them, like the proper health helplines, are extremely good. And I think it's, like I said, I think it's good to have these numbers. And I can only advise anyone feeling low to either call a hotline. And then, like you said before, what I was thinking about, this feeling of not wanting to be a burden is difficult. And also this feeling of being a burden is also facilitated by, I mean, you can be full of self-loathing and feeling bad about yourself in those situations. And I think I know the thought, I've had the thought, you know, if it's hard to imagine that someone else will want to listen to you and talk to you and like you if you yourself don't feel like listening to your thoughts anymore.
Yeah.
And don't actually like yourself in those moments very much. So I think these helplines are great because it's anonymous and they're paid to listen to people and
exactly.
Yeah, and you wouldn't be
and
a burden
they are professionals,
them.
You know. Yeah. Exactly.
So yeah. If you are suffering from depression and I can definitely, despite my experience, I think I can only encourage anyone to call one of these hotlines because I think they do generally do a great job.
Yeah. Like I feel like I haven't done that before, but I did it's something that I know that I can do. That's the thing that is actually quite a comfort to me, is that when I'm having one of my crazy nights, when I'm lying in bed and I have, you know, really bad depression, and because it's like I don't tend to have suicidal thoughts unless I'm alone or if it's in the middle of the night. That's when they will come. And I know that the simply knowing that there are these hotlines actually is sometimes enough for me to be like, okay. And then I think to myself, like, how bad is it now? Do I need to call someone or am I still okay? And so far I've been lucky where I've been sort of like, okay, well, I feel really, really bad. And yes, I am having suicidal thoughts, but I don't feel like I'm at the point where I actually need to call someone yet. But I like knowing that there is that option out there.
And many countries, I mean, I know that in Austria and Germany, they have it. They have, what they also have is sort of emergency mental health clinics. And it's not like, one imagines, it's not frightening. It's not a place where they lock you up or anything like that. You just go there and you talk to people. It's like a day clinic, but they also have people there at night and they should be there for everybody. And I know not all countries in the world have these kind of facilities or these kind of hotlines, but
I'm hoping it's getting more widespread, you know. Yeah. I feel like it is not there yet. I feel like there is a lot to be done still, but I think it is getting better, and that is also a relief, I suppose. Because I feel like every time For me, it's really one of the things that is really hard for me, actually, is every time I do hear of someone who succumbed to their depression and did end up committing suicide. That is something that really, it affects me really, really deeply. Like more than when someone, you know, dies in a tragic accident, which is obviously also terrible, but it affects me so much more when I hear that somebody did it intentionally, because it really scares me, because I know that I do struggle with suicidal thoughts, and I have done for actually, honestly, as long as I can remember. I remember having suicidal thoughts as a child, which also terrifies me sometimes. And it's sort of, I don't know, every time that happens, I'm sort of, every time I hear about that, it's sort of, it really scares me, because I sort of wonder, like, what happened? Was it just that it was just one time too many, you know, one depression too many, as it were, like, and where they just, or just knowing that it will come back again, you know? Because I think that's also something that's quite, you kind of have to, or I've had to sort of realize and sort of try to kind of make peace with, is that it, you know, yes, it will always end, but there is always a possibility it will come back. But try to focus on the fact that it will always end, you know, it will always stop. And so that is something that does really affect me quite badly, because there's always this fear that one day, for me, there's always this fear one day I will lose, you know? Like, the illness will win and I will lose. And that's something that is really scary, you know?
Yeah, that's understandable, because, you know, it's easier for people who have experienced feelings of depression or suicidal thoughts to understand why someone would do that.
And, yeah.
And so it's quite close to one's own struggles, as it were. And I also sometimes avoid reading too much coverage on these things, because I know that it will upset me more than other people maybe. And I mean, not sure if that's necessarily a good thing, but I think sometimes it does make sense not to provoke oneself too much. If you know that something will upset you, then I just sometimes avoid it, you know.
Yeah, that's like, for instance, there was that show on Netflix that everyone was watching, 13 Reasons Why, about the girl in high school who kills herself.
Yeah, I didn't watch that.
I didn't watch it either. For one thing, I heard from a lot of people, they were quite disturbed by the way the topic suicide was being discussed, I guess, or the way it was being portrayed in it. And I can't pass judgment on that, because I didn't watch it. But one of the reasons I didn't watch it was because the disclaimer at the beginning was, they have a disclaimer at the beginning, which I do think is a good thing, where the actors like say that, you know, this is about suicide and stuff, and you might find this triggering. And then I was just like, okay, no. And I clicked away because I got too scared, because I was like, I don't want to poke the bear, you know? Yeah. So I've never watched it, and I don't think I probably never will, because I think it would be too hard for me to watch.
Well, I think one doesn't have to go down every path, as it were.
I think that's important, is to know your limits as well, and don't push yourself. You don't have to push yourself. Like, you know, something that's like in our society, you're like supposed to push all your boundaries. Like, sometimes just don't, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes know that if there's a limit, or if there's something you don't want to risk, then just also, you know, it's fine to say, I'm going to sit this one out.
Yeah, definitely. I think, on the topic of depression and anxiety, I think we could probably carry on talking for hours and hours, and maybe we should even at some point do a second episode about it, because I think it is quite a big part of course it's a big part of mental health. And next week we'll be talking about gaslighting.
Because the poll was incredibly close on this one, actually. It was only one extra vote for depression, so that's why we decided to go for depression, obviously. But as it was so close, and as gaslighting is a really important topic, and also because I think that gaslighting can actually lead to depression and anxiety, we will be talking about gaslighting in our next episode.
Yeah. If you haven't already, give us a follow on Instagram, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Anchor, or any other podcast platforms where we might be. If you want to share any experiences you've had or would like us to talk about something specific, don't hesitate to DM us on Instagram.
Yes, a lot of people reach out to us in our DMs on Instagram, either with feedback or with their own experiences, and we really love hearing from you. So if you don't already, do give us a follow on Instagram and feel free to DM us anything you want. Well, not anything, don't send us anything gross, but like any experiences you want to share with us, or like don't send us dick pics is what I'm trying to say here. But if you want to share your experiences, if you want to, you know, or if you want us to talk about a certain topic that we haven't covered yet, feel free to follow us on Instagram and DM us.